It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 20 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT coming to you from home today. Not even in the main studio at home, from the guest room, which is live on YouTube. JT the Brick YT on a gorgeous Friday here in Vegas, and I hope everybody's doing well today. I am fired up to talk to you today because today in hour number two, we introduce our new summer radio topic, the Raiders' most influential draft picks of all time. And no drum roll, please. We're going to start off with Marv Hubbard. Yes, Marv Hubbard will be the first Raider draft pick that I picked because we had a nice meeting yesterday. We have 54 players that we're going to highlight, and I hope we get to 40 or 50 of them. But we're going to go from all different eras, and we're going to try to put all of these names, great names in Raider history. We're going to talk about one, two, three of them every show throughout the rest of the summer. I'm going to take a little 4th of July break. Then come back, we'll be ready for Raiders training camp, and we'll mix it in. And it's going to be a little bit more than a rejoin. You know, we're going to come out of segments, come out of breaks, and we're going to feature a player for about 5, 6, 7 minutes. And then hopefully the next day or that day, we can take some phone calls on that player. And remember, for everybody else out here, we're doing this for one reason, two reasons. One, to look back at the great history of the Raiders. And most importantly, we're doing it to try to educate the new Raider fans, especially the ones in Vegas, who don't know these guys. They don't know their history. They just don't know them. And it's not because they're not great fans. They're new. They're new fans, and they don't know about Marv Hubbard. And they don't know about Carlton Oates. And they don't know what they should know about Nnamdi Asamoah, right, and all these players. So yesterday, I had a meeting, and we went over this for about 2 hours. We came up with about 53 names of players, and we're going to go through them. And we're going to go through them, and we're just going to tell stories throughout the summer because I'm not good at mailing in the summer. I'm good at taking off a week or two because I got to do that, got to see mom and dad. But I'm not good at just throwing out garbage radio topics. We have too much of that in town. I don't want to do that. I want to give us something that we can focus on. And our streaming and the numbers we see tells us that this does really well for us in the summer. 2 years ago, we did the greatest games in Raiders history. We counted down the top 10 games. And then last year, we did the greatest roster in Raider history, position by position. And that was really good for us, too. So today, we're going to kick off the draft. And what we're trying to do here is figure out who had the biggest impact on the Raiders. We're not judging he's better than that or he's better than this guy. They're all great. Once we get into the top 10, you know, you could put the number 7 guy at number 2. You can put the number 3 guy at number 9. It's all the same. But the big boys, the guys who made the biggest difference, might not have been taken in the first round. You know, Charles Woodson was taken high, number 4 overall. Tim Brown was a first round pick. But what about Dave Dalby? What about Raymond Chester? What about George Atkinson and Jack Tatum? Where would you put them in all time for the impact that they had, and especially if they were drafted later in the draft, if they were taken in the 200s? I was just at Tom Brady's event the other night, and one of the signature pieces in Tom Brady's collection was his draft card, where he was taken 199, and that was in his case with his jerseys right next to his Super Bowl rings. And if you tell the story of Tom Brady, who's now the minority owner of the Raiders, one of them, a big part of his story was the fact that he wasn't drafted until the 6th round. So I think it's safe to say that you can say the greatest draft pick in NFL history was Tom Brady. Not because he was taken number 1 or in the 1st round, but he was forgotten and taken in the 6th round. So if you add the value of the late pick along with the 7 Super Bowls, without question, he will never be topped as the greatest draft pick in NFL history. You look at Jerry Rice. How come Bill Walsh knew about Jerry Rice, but other teams didn't take Jerry Rice before the Niners took him? You look back in history of, you know, Barry Sanders, Jim Brown, great players that were taken. We understand why they were taken. But why were players taken in the third or fourth round or the 12th round, like Rod Martin, one of my favorite Raiders of all time, or Reggie Kinlaw, who's definitely going to be high on this list because they were 12-round picks. And then they had unbelievable careers and won multiple Super Bowls. So we're going to make this work. It's going to be part of our programming. If we have breaking news and something happens along the way, we'll put it aside for a half hour or two. And I'm not going to shove this down your eardrums every day, but we're going to make it a part of the show. And I thought it was cool that at the top of next hour, we'll start off with Marv Hubbard. And I think it'll be cool to look back on really a player that had an up and down life. It was a really crazy life that he had. But oh boy, was he a great Raider. Oh my God, was he a great Raider. In preparation for the Marv Hubbard coming up here, I called Fred Biletnikoff today, had my cup of coffee, if you're watching on YouTube right here, and I sat in my backyard and talked to Fred Biletnikoff for 10 minutes, and I wanted to clarify how great of a player Marv was. And you know what Freddie told me? He goes, man, we had a whole bunch of guys who ran the football really well at the same time. Pete Banaszak, Marv Hubbard, you go to Mark Van Egan, you go to all the players that they had in the early to mid-70s, and the Raiders had like four running backs who all got the ball. So Freddie and I have this conversation about the four or five running backs that they carried on the roster, and Marv Hubbard was a three-time Pro Bowler, man. He went to three Pro Bowls, and you know, I'm sitting here, and he got injured the Super Bowl year, so he was out the year the Raiders won the Super Bowl. He got a Super Bowl ring, and then I thought about this year, right? This year could, and believe me, I don't want this taken out of content, but could a Zamir White, who's a third or fourth string running back and was given, Zamir White was given the first string starting running back last year. So he didn't have a good year. It's not the end of the world. They didn't have a really good offensive line. There were injuries. Raiders lost 10 games in a row. They weren't picking up first downs. So could Zamir White have a rebirth? Right? Say he's the fourth running back going into camp or the third. I'm assuming it's Ashton Gentry and Raheem Mostert. All of a sudden, we're sitting here looking at Zamir White. Can you imagine if Zamir White makes the team and they bring him in on third and one? And he's just running with those tree trunks for legs and thighs and runs people over. And all of a sudden, I know it's a reach with Marv Hubbard, but all of a sudden you got a Marv Hubbard guy now that is like a fullback and a short yardage back. So I think when you tell the history of the Raiders, and we look back at the history of the Raiders, God, Al Davis was good with the draft. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The amount of, I didn't even get to Al Davis's free agents. But the guys he drafted and the impact that Ron Wolf, and I hope we can get Ron Wolf on the show. A matter of fact, I got to get Ron Wolf on the show at some point this summer to talk about this because he was a part of the draft of a lot of these players. Is it's great when you can hit on the draft. You know, the Raiders from the 60s, they started in 1960. And through the 80s, right, the reason on the media guides it said the team of the decades, because they were the team of the decades. Now it's 2025. They are not the team of the new millennium. From 2000 to 2025, there's a Super Bowl appearance. There's a couple of AFC championship game appearances and playoff appearances, but there's been a big dry spell. From the 60s in the AFL through the 80s and Super Bowl 15 and 18, let it be known, there was a point where the Raiders were the best team in football or in the discussion with the Steel Curtain of the 70s, the great Cowboy teams of Roger Staubach, and the other great teams of that era. And when you tell the story of the Raiders, and I've been privy to these stories, I've been very lucky to be in the room with Ken Stabler and Fred Biletnikoff and Cliff Branch and Mark Davis, and to hear these stories, the guys still talk about the games they lost, which really would have gotten the Raiders from three Super Bowls to six or seven. And that's not a reach, man. I'm not exaggerating here. The Raiders had about six or seven Super Bowls where they were the favorite or the best team going into that postseason. And then you see the immaculate deception, the Rob Lytle fumble. You start looking at the tuck rule with the Patriots and you scratch your head going, what could have been? Well, imagine being the Chargers and having nothing. Imagine being the Chargers and really having nothing to ever look back on and being close. Really, really, only one time they were close, and Steve Young hung six touchdowns on their ass. How was that? Okay, the Raiders have great history, but we need new history. We need new history. And Pete Carroll is the shepherd of the new history. Pete Carroll knows what it's like to give a halftime speech in the locker room during the Super Bowl. He is the man now chosen to take the Raiders and now get a new piece of history with the Raiders and these players. I mean, can you imagine if Brock Bowers never won a Super Bowl with the Raiders? I can't. Can you imagine if we don't see Ashton Genty? Marcus Allen in front of me said to Ashton Genty that you could be the next Raiders Super Bowl MVP. I heard that. I was standing right next to him. Like, we got to get Ashton Genty and Brock Bowers and these guys and Max Crosby a Super Bowl. And the only way they're going to be able to do it, the only way they're going to do it is they got to thread the needle through the draft, through selective free agency, including re-signing good players and not letting them get into free agency, and building a dominant force. Because financially, the Raiders have never been stronger. The Raiders have never been worth this much money with an owner who puts all of his personal net worth and wealth, which he doesn't keep track of any of it, believe me, and he puts it all into the team. And I think everybody knows that Mark's putting even more of that now because he accepted new minority ownership to put more money into the team, so hopefully the team can win. Yes, there's been mistakes along the way with personnel and decisions on coaches. We've all identified that. But now we have a summer in Henderson, Nevada, where the Raiders can put together the beginning of something special. And last year was the beginning because we got Brock Bowers, which the Raiders never should have gotten. Brock Bowers never should have got to the Raiders with that pick. He should have been drafted earlier in the top five. Well, maybe that's the beginning. The fact that Max Crosby signed a contract extension. You don't think Max could have left and gone anywhere he wants? Do you see these arrogant NBA players? I'm going to get into that. Kevin Durant, Paul George, James Harden. If they're on a team and they're not winning for 2 or 3 years, they're gonzo. They're out of there. What did Max Crosby do? And Max was hanging out with Thor and my buddies last night at 8 Cigar Lounge. You know, Max decided to give his career to the Raiders and sign a contract extension. If Max Crosby wanted to leave and go to the Buffalo Bills or go to the Baltimore Ravens, he could do it like that. He could just wait for his contract to expire and leave. No, Max committed to this team. So if you look at all of that, I think that this is the turnaround. I don't know how long it's going to take, but as Vinny Bonsignor pointed out all week, and I heard Vinny do a really good job, Vinny said to Pete Carroll, it came here right now to win now. This is not the setup thing, dude, where we're waiting 2 to 3 years. You know, I noticed people are questioning, well, how long will Pete Carroll be here? Will it only be 3 years? What will his transition be? Pete could be here for 10. He could be as long as he wants. And the Raiders need to win now, this year. And that's the other thing we're going to do this summer is we're going to start talking about other teams in the AFC West. We're going to get closer to the Patriot game, which is the first road game. So we're going to have a week of previewing the Patriots. I'm honored that I'm going to be the play-by-play voice on the radio for the preseason as Jason Horowitz will go on television and do that. And I get a chance to call three games, which I gratefully enjoy and prepping for that. And then we're going to have other news that we don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully not injuries. We're waiting on Christian Wilkins. We're waiting to get clarity on the injury of Christian Wilkins and how he's healing or not. When we get clarity on that, we'll let you know. I've also told you that I believe, I don't know, I don't have any inside information, but I think the Raiders will add someone to that roster who will be significant. I believe that John Spytek knows this league as good as anybody from his time in Tampa, and he is scouring the waiver wire, and he's going to look at a player that's going to be cut for preseason cuts right there, and that player could join the Raiders and play cornerback or join the Raiders and play linebacker. I don't know, but I'm hoping that happens. And then the rest of this summer is going to be about the fans, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on with the fans. Again, I had a meeting yesterday with the Raiders, and we were talking about what camp's going to look like. And a lot of that I can't repeat until they announce it, but this is going to be special what they're doing over in Henderson, man. fans are going to be a part of this. Pete Carroll is excited about it. Alumni weekend, the weekend that the Niners are in town, alumni weekend. I mean, this is going to be a cool summer. It's going to be hot and sticky and early practices and later walkthroughs. But I'm really looking forward to it because every year I tell you that I hope things work out. Every year I tell you that, and I don't want to apologize for that. I don't come on the radio every year and tell you the Raiders are going to win four games or five games. I hope that they do well. Well, the last couple of years, it's been rough. We've had coaching changes, GMs being hired and fired, players getting injured, players not coming back from injuries quick enough, in my opinion. And now it's like everything has been run stealth, right? It's been run high-end stealth, and everything is super buttoned up and just different. It doesn't mean the other coaches didn't have great practices, great game plans, great meetings. No, this is just Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll does it better. And we're getting the sense that it's getting better. So we're excited. We hope you're excited. We want to hear from you. And we want you to get going at 702-365-9200. Little summertime radio. Next hour, we'll start with Marv Hubbard. I'm going to replay my interview with Jim Gray. A lot of people didn't hear that. You'll hear Jim Gray in the Hall of Excellence, which I'll be at tomorrow. I get another chance to go to the Hall of Excellence coming up on Saturday. And that's about it. And other than that, the NBA draft. So real quickly, before the show, I appreciate anybody who follows me on YouTube or Twitter. I did about a 40-minute podcast with my former producer, Sam Batesh, who's really good. Really good. He was a big, you know, behind-the-scenes director and producer at Fox and CBS. And he started off, I hired him on an airplane. He's on an airplane. We were coming from San Francisco to L.A., and he sat next to me on an airplane. My whole life's about fate. I met my wife walking into a Rolling Stones concert. Stranger. And she's my wife. I met Sam. He sat next to me on a Southwest flight. I hired him to be my producer. And now he's got a really good podcast that he does, which is cool, with Andrew Siciliano. And we just did about 45 minutes today on the NBA draft and the way it was terribly broadcast and how people are reacting to it. And I thought it was some pretty good content. So if you didn't get a chance to see it, JT the Brick on YouTube and JT the Brick on X, it's right up there. And we did that today. And what else did I want to get into? I'm watching golf here. We're excited about, obviously, any college football and NFL news. We're trying to book a couple of college football guests along the way. And, you know, we're excited about sports. And this is the time of year where I get to fill in on other shows. For the last 5 years, I filled in on Jim Rome's show for a week. He has a different platform now, not in TV, so I probably won't do that. But I'm filling in on Mad Dog Sports Radio in the summer here, and we're doing all of our shows. So excited about that. And that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to be reading some of the text on our YouTube a little bit more. This guy, Dustin, says, honestly, JT, I'm sick of hearing how well the Raiders are doing financially. That means nothing to me because it doesn't translate to wins. Just win. Well, the hell with you, Dustin, out of all due respect, because that's part of the story. We're already aware of their record. So if we talk about the financial gains that the Raiders made, which enables them to bring in new minority owners and keep players and pay more money for guys like Chip Kelly, we're going to mention it. If you can't handle the concept of finances in the NFL, find another channel. That's what I'm doing here. We're talking about all the concepts of this. If the Raiders aren't playing games in June, I can't talk about wins. I got to talk about how the Raiders are building their global brand financially that could help them recruit players to win. The best example I could give you was Devontae Adams. The Raiders had all this money. They go and trade for Devontae Adams, and Devontae Adams doesn't want to be here. Oh boy, what was that all about? I thought Devontae said his grandma wanted to watch him play in Vegas. Okay. I thought Devontae said he grew up a Raider. Here's his Raider jersey. He couldn't get out of here quick enough. Great guy, great player. Wish him well. Don't wish him well with the Rams. But, you know, we're trying to find players here. We're trying to find players here who want to be here and build this into a Super Bowl championship team. Let me throw this out to you here before we get to the calls. Again, if you want to get in here, get in if you can before the top of the hour, 702-365-9200. Is there anyone, and you can tweet at me at JT the Brick, Is there anyone in Raider Nation who doesn't believe that this is the start of a Super Bowl championship run? Pregnant pause. Still pausing. Is there anybody you know in Raider Nation that you're having a beer with, a Modelo with, a Tito's with, and if you looked them in the eye at the bar and said, do you believe that Brock Bowers, Max Crosby, and Ashton Jeanty, I'm going to throw in Ashton, are going to win a Super Bowl? And I'm talking in the short term. A short term would be 3 to 5 years. I don't know anybody in the Raider Nation who doesn't believe that. Now, that's good content. Someone should clip that. Am I predicting a Super Bowl win this year? No, I'm not. Am I predicting a Super Bowl win with the core of this team led by three players? Sorry for the rest of the team. I'm going to go Brock Bowers, Max Crosby, and Ashton Jeanty. Do you know anybody who doesn't think that this team is not going to win the Super Bowl in the next 3 to 5 years with those guys? Everyone I hang out with in Raider Nation believes that. We'll see if it happens. But if you looked at the roster 2 or 3 years ago, with no Ashton Jeanty, no Brock Bowers, a young Max Crosby in his second year, and looking around at Jimmy Garoppolo or the end of Derek Carr or whatever it was, there weren't many rational people that thought that they were going to win the Super Bowl. And they had some good players, man. Derek Carr was a hell of a player, man. Derek Carr in 2016, man, we're almost coming up on 10 years of the 2016 season. That was a pretty good football team. A very good football team. And, you know, Derek Carr breaks his ankle, breaks his leg, and it's over. But I really believe here, you know, I'm not a knucklehead going to run down to the Westgate and run through the floor and tell everyone to buy the Raiders winning the Super Bowl this year. But I do believe that they are on the right track to do something. So we'll go with that. And if you want to jump in on that, we can do that. Big D is on the phones here as I'm working from home today. How are you, Big D?
JT, happy Friday. All good, brother. Always an honor to speak in the Brick House here. On the subject matter, the great Raider players, I know this guy, he didn't have a great career, so to speak. I got to speak on him because of the impact he had when he played. Reggie Kinlaw, 1979, 12th round draft pick, 320th overall, and he only had 8 sacks, but despite being undersized at 6'2", 250, his quickness demanded double teams, which freed up Howie Long, Lyle Alzado, and Greg Townsend to make plays. Super Bowl 15, he had a big hand in shutting down Wilbur Montgomery. In the highlight videos, you can hear Dick Vermeil yelling, "Where the hell is the nose guard coming from?" And then in Super Bowl 18, he manhandled Jeff Bostic, one of the Hogs, and shut down the defending Super Bowl MVP, John Riggins. He makes the Raiders all-time Super Bowl team, and that's a guy, he didn't have a great career, but in the Super Bowl, his two biggest games, he played as big as anybody on defense. So that's what I got on that, man. I hope you have a great vacation with your family and everything, and stay safe, brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate the call. I will tell you this now to tease ahead. The consultants like that. Reggie Kinlaw, who I went on a cruise with his wife, and spent a lot of time with him. Reggie Kinlaw is definitely on my final list of the most influential Raiders draft picks of all time. No debate. So I'm not going to jump ahead because Reggie's going to be in a couple of weeks and we're going to get him on the radio, but no doubt about that. Because as Big D said, he had a huge impact because he was a 12th round pick. So when it comes to value, Reggie Kinlaw could be in the top 1, 2, or 3 to ever wear the silver and black. And then the fact that he backed it up with 2 Super Bowls, clearly he threads the needle on what we're trying to do with this summertime topic. You know, Fred Biletnikoff, Jim Otto, all the greats that we have are all going to be, you know, in our top 10, top 15, if they would take it in the first or second round. But we're looking for those nuggets, those players that were drafted, not free agents, that came in and just did everything great. And they were big time players. And there's a lot of them. And there's a lot of them on this team. And a lot of it has to do with history, and we talk a lot of history on this show. Tim in Sacramento, you're on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Hello, Tim.
Honored to be here, JT. And, you know, mentioning Kincaid, How about him on the Bills? And I just remember vividly because I owned a 2007 DVD of the New York Giants Super Bowl run, and the backup running back for the Giants, Ahmad Bradshaw, had a field day on the ground. And I wanted to get to the ground attack because Aston Jeanty, first pick for the Raiders, first round, and he decided to go run game. And in an interview he had with Amon-Ra St. Brown and his twin brother, he revealed that playing overseas was a piece of cake to him. He was getting 300 on the ground a game. And in the NFL, nearly 300 has been Adrian Peterson. Nobody has gotten close as him. And he said that back in 2007 as a rookie.
Aston okay, your phone's breaking up, my friend. You got too much wind in the background, but I appreciate you bringing up Ashton, Adrian Peterson, what he was able to do. Yeah, I don't know. We've interviewed Ashton Jeanty a few times. He did some things overseas. The son of a military family, and almost won the Heisman Trophy for Boise State. Ashton Jeanty, to me, is a very important piece. Not the team. He's a very important piece for the Raiders trying to build the Super Bowl championship. Good start to the show. We'll get to Marv Hubbard. I have some sound coming up on that at the top of the hour. We'll replay my Jim Gray interview. We'll take your calls. Hey, Albert Hall's going to join us next. He runs NBA Summer League. Good friend of mine. And he's got a lot to say. Tickets just went on sale to one of the great events in all of Vegas. Without a doubt, one of the great events in Vegas, NBA Summer League. So we'll talk to him and get back to you as we continue. Brought to you by PTs, they fuel the monologue.
With the first pick in the 2025 NBA Draft, the Dallas Mavericks select Cooper Flagg from Duke University.
How about that pick? Captain Obvious pick, but a great player. JT, back with you, brought to you by Modelo. If I don't have the greatest wife in the world, she's got to be on the Mount Rushmore. You know what she does on Friday? She takes my Modelos and she puts them at the pool on ice, a bucket of Modelos. They are dripping wet right now with ice all on top of them. And when the show ends, I have a bucket of Modelos in my backyard brick. And I mean that. Modelo, proud partner of the show. I consider him one of my partners because I was one of the first people to help him promote on the radio NBA Summer League from Hall Pass Media, Albert Hall. And man, my friend, I couldn't wait to talk to you today. I have a feeling this is the perfect storm with this class for NBA Summer League. How are you?
I'm great, buddy. Let's go. We are fired up, very excited. Schedule just dropped 10 o'clock, and some of these matchups are historic. And again, thank you from day one. You've been promoting and helping us grow this thing, and you've seen what it is now. And I think this is going to be one of our best years ever.
Yes, and let me tell you why, with showing respect to our partners, which we do. I thought there was a little bit of a miss on the broadcast because there wasn't enough knowledge and there wasn't enough talk about the French players and the Euros. And my son's watching it with me going, I'm like, what's going on here with these guys from Paris and France? And my son knew who they were, and then they take a guy from Madrid. I need to see these players play and learn more about them at NBA Summer League. Do you think that's going to be different this time with Cooper Flagg and all the great players, but the fact that we're going to see some Euros that we need to know more about?
Yeah, no question. I think there was a run on those guys, particularly second round, with NIL now making a difference in college basketball. A lot of these guys went back to school who may be in that late first, second round now. But the European players, as you know, really good players. I mean, we've got a number of MVPs coming out of there now. Their development, the French connection is really strong. So we're excited. We welcome those guys just like we always have. International basketball has been a huge part of Summer League from day one. We have every team in the world represented at Summer League between the Euros and the Latin American players. Now we have this kid from China who was drafted in the first round by Portland. So there's a handsome son. There's a lot of good players coming in, not just the guys we know from college, but all over the world. And that's the place, man. Summer League, they get after it.
Albert Hall's our guest. Can you tell us how you've evolved with the international players here over this long of a time where they come in and it's a quick turnaround. They have their press conference. They go to their team. They're trying to adapt with their team and start a new life in a different city. And then, boom, they're at Summer League and they have different cultures. It's different food, different fan bases, and you house them here for a long time so they can get comfortable with their first big step into the NBA.
Yeah, no question. And I think the biggest thing is different coaching, right? So they need to come, they need to understand the NBA game, the pace, the sets that they're running. And really with the teams, now they can evaluate where they fit in. Is this a guy that we're going to have as a roster guy? Is he a two-way player? Is he a draft and stash guy, because some of these guys are really young and they can still go over there. The reality is they want to maintain those rights. You look at Jokic and, or Joker and, you know, what's happened with him and Giannis and all these guys. It's like if they maintain their rights, now they have more flexibility. So getting them out to Vegas, getting them acclimated, playing summer league, being around the NBA atmosphere, it just is a good evaluation process, not only for right now, but down the road. And, like, the talent level is great, and we're just pumped up to have him. It's a good setting.
Yeah, Albert Hall's our guest. So what I think is also interesting to me is the Cooper Flagg story. And you knew some one-and-done guys back in the day, and obviously one-year guys that come from the league 1 year and come in. Can you tell us a little bit about this story about him advancing and skipping a year in high school, then getting to Duke, and then going to the NBA at this age? Because people were sitting there interviewing him on the Today Show, and they don't know the NBA in depth like we do. And they're like, wait a second, you're 18 years old. How did this happen? What's so unique about his story?
Well, I think Maine, number one, right? You don't hear players from Maine every day, but he was a big kid at a younger age. I mean, I heard about him when he was 15, and most like most of these guys, at 15, 16 is really when you come on the scene, you know, and you think this guy, he could be good, not sure, and then he stacks up against all the other players with the hype, and he killed them. I mean, bottom line was he was the best player out there, and then I think what really changed was when we brought him last year, he was out at Summer League with Team USA and scrimmaging against the top Olympic team, and he held his own, looked apart, was like, wow, this guy's going to be really good. So I think for him to fast track maturity wise, I think, you know, not everybody can do that and reclassify, but for him it was a good setting. And then when you talk about Duke, no matter what, Duke is looked at as like an NBA franchise, the way they run things. Rachel Baker, the general manager there, she's done an unbelievable job of incorporating everything with Coach Shire. So they really feel like it's almost a pro program. And these guys come in a little more polished.
Albert Hall, as we wrap it up, that's a great way to talk about polishing these players and the ones that come in here who are raw. And when Wemby came in and I was underneath the basket and he was warming up, everybody had their camera phone out wanting to see Wemby's first bucket. And it was a putback and everybody's looking. You could see the and feel the energy, because you really built out that area for media behind the basket and the lounge you have there, and then going to the upper deck. When something like that happens, as we wrap this up, when a player comes in and you get a chance to see Cooper Flagg's first ever bucket at NBA Summer League, that's a special moment that resonates with fans.
It's traditional, but yet it's you're the first person to see it, and you can say, hey, I was there on that day. You know, and now with social media, it really takes on a whole other life. The reality is it's the first time they're a pro. And that is something, you know, when the families come out, they're wearing that jersey for the first time. We do a great job along with ESPN and our other partners of pumping this thing up. And we're just, you know, every year it's a different story. And Cooper's getting a lot of the hype, but I'm telling you, VJ Edgecombe, you know, Dylan Harper, Ace, some of these guys, Igor, there's some really good players in this draft. Next year's draft looks amazing as well. So, you know, you always got to evaluate the talent, but the best thing is you got to show it on the floor at Summer League. You can't hide there. You come out and hoop, and good things happen.
So we're going to UNLV tickets. How does everybody jump in here and get rolling here? Because as I've told everyone UNLV over the years, tickets, you got to be – go ahead.
I was going to say UNLVtickets.com, NBAevents.com. We have tickets on sale now. From general admission all the way to floor seats, depending on the day, reserve seats available. As you mentioned, the Michelob Ultra Deck seats available, NBA experiences. So go now, 702-739-FANS, UNLVtickets.com, NBAevents.com. And JT, I gotta pump up one thing. I'm working on a Raider connection. My boy Max just texted me, our guy. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get Coach Carroll out there for our honorary tip on opening night for that Cooper Flag game. So I thought that would be a nice little tribute to get this Raider momentum going.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I got some juice, as you know, but I don't got the Max juice. Max is the guy who's going to get that done. And how about Max Crosby? He did his hoops. He did a sack summit yesterday at UNLV, as you know. And he's at H Cigar Lounge last night with fans. And, God, Max has got a basketball court in his house. I mean, he loves hoops.
He's a beast. He hit me up going, hey, I want to do more. He wants to interview players. He ran his podcast there last year. He's all in. He's done a great job. And the last thing I'll say, the second weekend, remember this year we finished on a Sunday for championship, but the second weekend we have grown the Summer League Film Festival to an amazing product now. We have 34 films we're rolling out, all NBA driven. Second weekend, your ticket gets you in there, and we're going to drop the Kings of Vegas. Just remember this, Kings of Vegas. Ooh. The UNLV Run and Rebel story, 89-90, produced by Snoop Dogg. We got Mark Wahlberg involved. It's going to be big time.
Unbelievable. Thanks for having me out again every year to do the show out there. I'll see you a bunch. And congratulations on all the success and especially coming into this year.
Appreciate it. You're the best.
Thank you, buddy. Albert Hall, Hall Pass Media, what him and Wayne have done. Again, I want to say this. What they've done to make NBA Summer League a monster. I was one of the first calls they made in the beginning to bring the show out there. And then we're talking, I don't know the exact year, I should. And we haven't missed it. And it's great. And for kids, I always get that plug in after I interview him. Take your kids there and let them learn how to grow up without mommy and daddy. Drop your kids off, get them tickets, make sure they get in safely to the tot, and then leave them alone. Let your kids, not your toddlers, I'm not playing dad, but your 10, 11, 9-year-old boys and girls have the day. That's what we do with my kids. I'll never forget dropping them off here and saying, I'll meet you right here at 6 o'clock tonight, and drop them off, you know, at 11 a.m. And they'd come down the stairs and I'd be waiting for them. And they have posters and autographs and all this. And it was just a great way to have a great time. Yeah, Max Crosby. Max wants things to do, man. He's not a club guy. He's sober. He's not a drinker. You know, he's not at day clubs getting bottles. He wants to be at the NBA Summer League. Guy's unbelievable, man. Guy is absolutely from the heart. And so's Albert Hall. Good to have him on. Opens up a line for you to the top of the hour. Let's get it going. 702-365-9200 if you want to get in. And let's get rolling here. And have a good time. Coming up at the top of the hour, we debut our most influential draft picks in Raider history. Marv Hubbard goes first, and I got a little bit of sound to play coming up next from Ken Stabler. You don't want to miss this audio piece coming up next.
Well, it starts with our effort. I hate, if one thing I've learned from Coach is to make sure, simplify the message and just keep giving it to him. Just keep giving it to him. So like, it doesn't have to be 20 code word, or buzzwords or some big paragraph or anything. We got to play with great effort. We're building the foundation for being a physical team. We got to play smart, you know? So those are the things in terms of what we want the defense to look like. And then, you know, make the offense earn it. You know, no easy plays. Got to take away seams. Got to take away posts. Can't let them run the ball around the edge. Again, it's not real football in terms of the run game yet, but we have to have an understanding of that's what we're trying not to give up, you know?
Wow, that's Patrick Graham. These sound bites are incredible. Great job by Bobby to grab it. He talks about building a foundation to be a more physical defensive football team. Well, I would counter that that foundation has already been lightly built and built even higher than that by Patrick Graham before Pete Carroll and John Spytek got here. Max Crosby, a great example. Christian Wilkins hopefully fits that mold. Malcolm Kuntz hopefully stays healthy. Adam Butler, a physical player. Now a Pete Carroll with Patrick Graham coaches him differently. Did you hear that soundbite when he talks about cutting off seams and doing certain things? That's Pete Carroll telling Patrick Graham, you're a good coach, very good, but I want to add something to this defense. I want to make sure this defense has a different wrinkle. I want them to be tougher. I want them to be more disciplined. I want them to cut off routes and seams. And God, how bad have the Raiders been on the edge for the last couple of years? I mean, that's a really important part of Tyree Wilson's development. If Tyree Wilson or Malcolm Kuntz are on the edge, because we know Max, and Max is strong on the edge. He can tackle running backs on the edge. Other guys haven't, man. And the edge is something Eric Allen talks to me about all the time. If we do a post-game show and EA will say, you know, got beat off the edge, I know it's a bad problem. That's got to get cleaned up. No doubt about that. So top of the hour, we're going to kick it off with Marv Hubbard. That's the first player. And a guy just texted me, why'd you pick Marv first? Because I knew Marv, and I'll tell the story. I got a chance to meet Marv. He was a really unique guy. Big partier, big drinker, had some demons, but was good to me, man. When I started with the Raiders, he was fantastic to me. So we'll start with Marv, and then we'll talk about him. And then on Monday, Mike Davis, Red Right 88, and Terry McDaniel. So those are two players that we're going to feature on Monday. We might do three. But we're going to count down at least 50 players are going to make our list as the most influential Raiders draft picks of all time. Found this piece of audio that I sent over to Bobby, Ken Stabler, talking about his teammate, Marv Hubbard.
We used to have this big old fullback named Marv Hubbard. A lot of you guys might remember that name. He was number 44, 6'3", 240 pounds, tough as a nail. Upstate New Yorker, you know, tough on the field, tough off the field. Marv carried the ball 25 times and gained 89. He's fun to be around. Marv carried the ball 25 times and gained 40 yards. He's going to break something. He's going to tear something up, a car, service station, things like that. And tough, tough guy. Marv used to take this cold medicine. It made him talk a lot. You know, it made him talk a lot. It was actually amphetamines, but it was cold medicine. It made him talk a lot. We're playing Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City. And those great Kansas City Chief teams, if you remember, Buck Buchanan and Curly Cook and Jim Lynch and Johnny Robinson and Emmett Thomas, great, great Hank Stram coach teams, really good football team. Well, we're playing them up in Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. All week long as we're practicing in Oakland, Marv is taking that cold medicine and it's making him talk a lot. And Marv is popping off. Yeah, we're going to go up to Kansas City and I'm going to run the ball. Kenny's going to throw the ball. We're just going to beat the hell out of the Chiefs. The Chiefs media is taking this stuff, putting it on the bulletin board and creating a huge booby trap for us up there. So we go up to Kansas City to play the Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium. And we win the toss. We get the ball. They kick off to us. We get the ball on our own 25, 30-yard line. And we go up in the first third down series. We go two plays, no gain, you know, 3 or 4 yards. First third down series of the game, first third down play, third and one. I got a short yardage play called off the left side. And if you remember their middle linebacker, remember all those great players I just named, you know, Buck Buchanan and all those. Remember their middle linebacker? Remember a guy named Curly Culp? And remember Jim Lynch, Johnny Robinson, all those guys? Remember Willie Lanier, Hall of Fame middle linebacker? Looked like a Coke machine with a head on it, you know. I got that short yardage play called off the left side, and I got there barking numbers, and I'm going to give the ball to Marv Hubbard, and Marv stands up out of his stance and walks right up over my shoulder. And true story, he looked right at Willie Lanier. I said, hey, you big son of a bitch, we're going right there. It's hard enough to gain 10 on 3-4 downs without your fullback telling the middle linebacker where you're going. Hey, you big SOB, we're going right there. And he had cold medicine working on it. And so I just leave the play on. I get up there, spin around, give him the ball, and Willie Lanier meets him right in the hole. Bang. It just echoes down through Arrowhead Stadium, and Marv gets up off the bottom of the pile. And he's looking out of the ear hole. He's got a little blood running out of the corner of his nose. And he staggers by me and he said, I need to keep my damn mouth shut.
How great of a story is that? So that's what we're doing. Marv Hubbard, our first Raider draft pick, the impact that he had. And then to hear Snake's voice, to hear Kenny Stabler tell a story about Marv Hubbard. And he talked about all those short yardage backs that they had and that Willie Lanier story. It's just incredible, and that's what we're trying to do this summer. Tell some new stories, even new ones that I haven't heard. I never heard that story, and Bobby was able to get it from Kenny Stabler, and we'll do that. And then on Monday, when we come back on Monday, we're building Mike Davis, Remember the great interception against the Browns, Red Right 88, led to one of his two Super Bowls. He's one of the greatest Raiders draft picks of all time. And when we met yesterday, we were kind of, I had three guys I met with yesterday, and we did about an hour or two over lunch at Grimaldi's. Went to Grimaldi's on Eastern. Man, I don't know how you people deal with Eastern, man. Oh, Eastern, man. You better make sure you make the right turn getting on Eastern and off. We went to Grimaldi's and we sat down and went through all these players. And there's some good Raider draft picks all time, including Khalil Mack. Now, Khalil won't make my top 10, but Khalil Mack is one of the greatest Raider draft picks of all time. He's a part of this list. Jim Plunkett isn't, because Jim Plunkett wasn't drafted by the Raiders. So one of the players we'll be talking about in the coming days or weeks will be Khalil Mack. Also, Lance Allworth was drafted by Al Davis, ended up not getting to the Raiders. Mel Renfro, one of the great corners in the history of the NFL. When you had the choice between the AFL and the NFL, a Raider draft pick initially. But we're going to stick to the players that had the biggest impact. So we'll come back hour number two as I'm at home, Bucking the Modelo's Friday, and continue on here. A lot going on next week. I know Q's back from vacation. I'm going on vacation next week. Before 4th of July, we have Harry Ruiz will be sitting in for me and the great Vince Sapienza from our morning show. And I'm going to head back east and see some family and then come back refreshed for what will be, I think, a great Raiders training camp. Hope so. I really enjoyed Costa Mesa last year, but not a lot of football came out of that. We need some football to come out of Henderson this training camp and for the Raiders to go on a march to the playoffs.